What's up, everybody? Welcome to Browner and Lawhead here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. I am John Browner. I am always joined by my co-host, Jason Lawhead. If you are with us on YouTube, under Kaplan and Crew, you've seen them wave. If you're listening to us via radio, like I said, on the Mightier 1090, or you've downloaded the show from iTunes and you're podcasting us, thank you. Like, subscribe, and share. But if you're driving, buckle up, pay attention, because we about to hit you with some facts. Again, this show only tells you stuff that we want to have fun with. By the time you get to 6 p.m., by the time you reach us, you know all you need to know. Now you're in your car, you're still stuck in traffic, so let's have some fun with this thing. The big news, well, first and foremost, Jason, I'm going to compare you to James Harden in a way you never knew. So okay. I hope you're ready for that today.
I wasn't a ball hog in high school. So don't put that on me.
No, it's got a lot to do with strip clubs.
Oh, okay. Well,
interesting. Yeah, see?
I'm curious.
There's a side to Jason y'all don't know.
I've never been to a strip club before. That's for sure.
Yeah, See? Again, James Harden, Jason Lawhead. when I break this down, you're going to understand how close they are in proximity to you know what. But there's bigger news. There's bigger fish to fry. Sean Payton has walked away from the New Orleans Saints for so many reasons that I think they are obvious that we'll get into them. This idea of him being tired is interesting. Jason, when you heard the news of Sean Payton stepping away, what did you instantly think?
Well, first off, I was like, did he get forced out again? Was he putting bounties on people? Obviously, he wasn't with the way they finished this year. But I thought initially he's probably going to take a television job. He's still a pretty young guy. He's really only been at that one franchise stop as a head coach. It's not like he's been a journeyman guy that's like on his third or fourth job where it's kind of like, okay, he's really burned out and that's the way, you know. So I feel like it's either a combination of he wants to get into a television network job to take a few years off and see the landscape of the league, see what maybe a Tom Brady does in his division, see what maybe the NFC shakes out. Is Brady and Rodgers going to be around? Is the Saints worth coming back to? I know that they signed Taysom Hill to an extension. I don't know if that had anything to do with the possibility of him seeing his short-term future go up in smoke there, having to commit to Taysom as a quarterback, or at least one of the main options to compete for the job. So I think it's more of a TV move. I think with the way everything's going, in that kind of media direction, celebrity, it sets him up for either coming back with some flair to New Orleans with a better roster, or it sets him up to be open to a multitude of jobs depending on who leaves, who stays, where guys go, and what kind of teams shift in the kind of power structure of the NFL and especially the NFC.
I can tell you why Sean Payton left, and it don't take a rocket scientist to see why. The Saints have no quarterback, none, and they're $70 million over the cap.
Yeah, that hurts.
70. Let me repeat that to you. Not seven, not 17. $70 million over the cap. Malcolm Thomas, their best receiver, doesn't want to play for them. Alvin Kamara was hurt this year, but he's been relatively good. Outside of that, Sean Payton has kept that thing afloat because a lot of people don't get knee deep in sports. That's our job. The Benson family, who owns the team, they're a mess. They're Spano South. Like Gail Benson.
Spanos Gross. Marty Gross. Spanos Gross.
Yes. The woman who owns the team now was married to Mr. Benson, who passed. They then turned all the power over to her, not his kids, which, by the way, she forced in a will. So the will was supposed to go to the kids, but she had the money and she had basically the power to make the final decision. But it was in the will that was supposed to go to the kids. She wiped his kids out, sent them to work for the Pelicans and let her kids work for the Saints. So there is more to the under the surface of this. But pure football reasons, they're $70 million over the cap. If I'm Sean Payton, I got no quarterback, and I can't sign nobody.
Right.
I'm out of here. Let me walk away from this. And I think they're trying to save money as well because, again, traditionally, New Orleans is not a franchise tripping over $100 bills. So they're a very family-run, frugal organization. So I know they don't really want to pay Sean Payton. We had John Clayton on the show earlier today, and him and I got into a nice little healthy back and forth about Sean Payton coaching someone else, and he started yelling about he's under contract. The Saints don't want to pay that. They don't want to pay Sean Payton to go away and then pay somebody else to coach them. So the stepping away means stepping away, in my opinion. And I think he's looking around the landscape. There are 9 open jobs.
Yeah, 9. That none have been filled yet. Which
they're nine open jobs. The 2 names that we kept hearing were Harbaugh and depending on where you are, Brian Daboll, the offensive coordinator for the Bills. But I think that's more Josh Allen driven than it is offensive play calling, but that's just my personal opinion. There's so many good candidates out there. If Sean Payton wants to coach, because I don't believe he's tired. He's relatively a young man in terms of football. I don't think he wants to retire. I just think he wants to retire from that. I think he wants a different challenge. So if we're looking at this and all these 9 jobs, he's the number one candidate. He's the number one candidate. He might lead to a 10th vacancy in Dallas because everybody knows Jerry Jones would love to hire Sean Payton. Tried to hire Sean Payton away from the Saints before he signed his new contract, but he couldn't leave Drew Brees. Drew Brees gone.
Yeah.
Drew Brees gone.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting move. I what do you think? Do you think he takes a job that's available and is coaching next year? Or do you think he's in a broadcast booth or in a studio panel talking football and, you know, let's next year shake out into this time next year and be on the block to be one of these guys that, you know, is up for another vacancy? Or, you know, what do you see his short-term future?
I'm glad you asked that question. Would you watch a game because he's the play-by-play announcer?
Oh, no. I don't watch a game for any reason for that. I mean...
Perfect. Would you watch a pregame show because Sean Payton is on the pregame show?
No, not at all.
Me neither. So this idea... So there's also... Because you said the TV thing, and that's a real talking point for people. People are really out there saying that. I don't find those shows any reason for me to tune in.
No,
and I don't think young people definitely aren't watching them. Most people that I know watch games at bars. And if you live in a particular city, you're not sitting in front of your television for an hour watching pregame shows. So Sean Payton has no real relevance to either of those 2 things. I'm not sitting down and watching any particular game because he's calling it. And I'm not watching a pregame show because he's on it. So if this idea that the networks are going to battle back and forth for Sean Payton, what do you know about Sean Payton's character? Is he a funny guy? Is he sarcastic? Is he like what's his personality like?
Well, I mean, I from what I've gathered on his personality, I mean, he's obviously equipped to, you know, have some type of mode of communication that can be television friendly, I would imagine. I mean, he obviously knows the offensive side of the ball and can give those kind of expertises. Yeah. Does the fan care who the networks are fighting over to watch? No. You know, what the Mannings are doing and their Manning cast, that's unique. People do tune in, especially if they were diehard Manning fans. If you were a Giant or a Colt fan or a Bronco fan or a Tennessee football fan or Ole Miss, yeah, you might be like, I really want to watch the Manning cast because that does draw in. But there are also these guys have accomplishments, you know, that most quarterbacks have never had an opportunity to come across, which is 4 Super Bowl rings between them. So, you know, that's a different state of mind when you're thinking like, ooh, I want to tune in. Do guys tune in because Tony Dungy's on NBC? No. Do people care if Tony Dungy left NBC to go do the pregame with Terry Bradshaw and Howie Long? Nobody would care. They would just be like, well, this is the channel of the game I want to watch today. So I'm that pregame's on because I turned it on early. That's really it. I mean, did the ratings go up for Sunday night football pregame because Drew Brees joined? Probably not. No,
I mean, by the way,
or nothing tangible enough to even, you know, measure. So yeah, in that sense, no, but does he want it? You know, does he just want to cool the right. Jets? And even if we don't care if networks are going to battle over him, you know, there's that seat at the table for him, I believe, because of, you know, all of his success. And, you know, I mean, Drew Brees was able to just move right into a seat like that. When Tony Dungy retired, he was able to move into a seat like that. So that's all I'm asking. I don't know. I'm curious to see what the major move is here. And now that you mention, you know, them over that salary cap number without a quarterback and having to re-sign Taysom Hill, I mean, that's obviously probably the first thing that made him leave skid marks. And I'm just curious to see, does he fill one of these jobs now? Or does he sit back and examine the league from afar, like an analyst gets to? You know, John Gruden did it for about 8 or 10 years. And does he just do that for a quick 1 or 2 years to see where things are moving? Because, you know, hey, he takes next year off, or even the year after, he's coming back with probably no Tom Brady in the league, no Aaron Rodgers in the league, or on his, you know, last hurrah if he's anywhere else. And there's a lot more to work with as far as who you don't have to beat to get places. So I don't know. I'm just curious to see what his next move is.
This idea that all these players are supposed to come right off the field and go right into the booth and be great. Listen, Drew Brees ain't that good, man. He was a fantastic football player. I've watched him on television now, 1 year in. Calling games in NBC for Notre Dame. I've watched a couple Notre Dame games. I definitely watched when he lost to Cincinnati. And I've seen him on the NBC pre and post.
He's serviceable.
Hey, I'm not tuning in for that. He's not giving me any insight. He's not a character. I'm tuning in to see characters. I'm tuning in to a pregame show to be entertained. Me, I'm a meat. When I'm not working, doing this job, I mean, people would still say I'm a meathead either way. I'm a meathead football fan, dude. I like hot takes. I like entertainment. I want to laugh. Like a person who I think needs way more recognition but doesn't get it, is somebody like Steve Smith, former wide receiver for the Panthers. He tells you what he thinks. You will never not know what he thinks. He will be honest. You're not going to get that from Drew Brees.
Marshawn Lynch. Right.
Well, Marshawn Lynch is a little too wild.
But
Steve Smith is contained because he's on television. He's had a lot of practice and he's had media training. So he gets it. If you would put Aqib Talib in the booth, you won't do it for Steve Smith, who is a better person on television and will threaten to fight somebody on the field.
Yeah.
Like, so this idea that Sean Payton's going to be even good in the booth completely misses me. But you know what doesn't miss me? An opportunity to make money. An opportunity for you to make money with DraftKings. There are just 4 teams left. I got a piece of paper. The paper told me it's 4 teams left, but I know it's 4 teams left. There's only 4 teams left, and you know what that means. You can make money from DraftKings Sportsbook, the official betting partner of the NFL, and they're counting down to Super Bowl 56. Customers can get 56-1 odds on any team. Bet just $5 and get $280 in free bets if your team wins.
Not a new customer? Look, you can experience the conference championship with the same game parlays. Combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. Look, DraftKings is safe, it's secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code GREATFRIENDS and get 56-1 odds on any NFL team. Bet just $5 and win $280 in free bets if your team wins. Team promotional codes GREATFRIENDS for 56-1 odds at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Remember, you must be 21 or older to gamble. New customer, your minimum deposit must be $5 with at least a $1 wager required per customer. Restrictions apply. And remember, if you have any gambling issues, call 1-800-GAMBLER. And you can always head over to the DraftKings.com website if you have any other questions. Money!
Money.
That's that money, money, money I'm talking about, y'all. That's that money, 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 money.
Johnny Manziel. Remember Johnny Manziel? What? The only thing he brought, he brought to the league was this, the little money sign. That was it.
Can we have a sidebar about Johnny Manziel real quick? I was wrong about Johnny Manziel. I wanted him to be great. I really, really did. Johnny Manziel, there have been three people since I started watching college football that if that game is on, I'm watching them. The first one was Reggie Bush. The other one was Vince Young. Looking for me, they play at the same time. And believe it or not, the third one was Johnny Manziel. Doc, Johnny Manziel was so great at Texas A&M. I mean, who knew it was Coke fueled? But he was so good at Texas A&M. I thought some of that would translate. And for whatever reason, man, off the field, he must have been so bad with the Browns. And I mean so bad because he didn't even get a second chance. Like, Tebow got more chances than him.
Yeah, I have archive video of my old podcast back when we drafted him, and I just said, I just don't think this is the guy. I just think he's one of those college greats, you know. I mean, even in the SEC, even at Texas A&M, even when you play against these types of teams on Saturday, even the best of the best, there might be three everyday NFL Sunday guys on the other side of the ball. There might be a couple other that stay on some rosters. And then the other five or six that are starting on that defense are doing something else in life. That, you know, but when you get to the NFL, all 11 guys that are starting are supposed to be starting in the NFL. Right. They're not just,
ain't no mistakes. You know,
yeah, and I always said that. I said Johnny was the master of the broken play, which you can get away with in college. You can get away with, you know, screwing something up and getting yourself into second and 18 and third and 23 and then working your way out of it at A&M when you're playing Ole Miss or Arkansas or somebody. But that just doesn't shake out in the NFL, and you can't get yourselves into those kind of positions. And I just think even if Johnny Manziel was a choir boy and had a better approach to the game, obviously he might have been slightly more successful with more between the ears. But I never thought for a day he was. I even said, I said, this is going to be an instant 30 for 30. The Browns are either going to go 17-18-0 and win the Super Bowl with this guy, or it's going to be such an implosion disaster that they're going to be doing a 30 for 30 from this guy from a jail cell. And it was closer to the latter than the former.
Yeah, man.
You know, he was hiding out in disguise in a friggin' Vegas hotel room or a Vegas casino playing blackjack on a day he said he was sick and not a practice before, you know. So he just had one of those just great only college names anyway. Johnny Manziel, Brian Bosworth. It's just like you could just hear it in his name that he was just going to be a college great and an NFL flop.
I wanted him to be good so bad. There are nine open. With Sean Payton now gone, we'll stop talking about Johnny Manziel. I know people are like, what the hell are y'all doing? He was drafted by the Padres. Right. There are nine opening jobs in the NFL. Do I think Sean Payton will take one? I don't know. It depends on how much money the Raiders are willing to give him. He has close ties with the Chicago Bears, and he also has close ties with Jerry Jones. So if he's going to take a job, I would say those are the three jobs if he was going to take one. But in my opinion, of the people out there, he's absolutely head and shoulders the number one guy for me, in my opinion.
Let me ask you something, because I'm kind of surprised by we're going into championship week. And the Monday after the regular season is when almost all coaches are let go, every coach basically. And none of those jobs have been filled. Usually, at least, even if it's five coaches that were fired. Two or three have been filled by now, or, you know, we're 0 for 9 right now. That's a big number of vacancies and a absolutely squashed number of jobs filled in those vacancies, which I'm a little surprised at. Let me ask you something. And I know we've had the Passaccia talk before, but with all these guys they're interviewing, I mean, if it's not Harbaugh, if it's not a guy like Peyton, if it isn't a big splash name, don't you think that the Raiders are better off bringing back Passaccia if they're just going to interview a bunch of other kind of guys that haven't either been head coaches or some coordinators or maybe had a dip in for a head coaching job for a minute and have been back out as a coordinator because they've been fired somewhere else on some short job experiences? Rest their way and not kill them, and let's be a coach's, you know, player's coach to that degree. What's your thoughts on that?
I'll tell you when we come back, Brown and Lawhead. Welcome back. Back to Brown and Lawhead here on the Mightier 1090 ESPN. Oh, man, we were talking on the – oh, dropped my pen. We were talking earlier before the commercial break about what do I think about Rich Passaccia and where he's going to go and what's going to happen with him and the Raiders. If you miss anything that we did on the show, head over to YouTube or head over to iTunes and download the show. Kaplan and Crew is the homepage of both things, and Brown and Lawhead has the date that separates us from them, so you guys can see the show and catch up to everything you missed. Check out some of our previous shows, too. Like, share, and subscribe. We're going to talk about how Jason is very similar to James Harden coming up, but let me answer your question. I don't think Rich Passaccia is the long-term answer at head coach. What you're saying is very true. There are a lot of guys out there that really are just, like they're outside of Jim Harbaugh or Sean Payton, there isn't really a guy that people are saying, we have to have that guy. Even in Harbaugh's case, there's not a bidding war for him. I think that initially it was a hot conversation, and now no one's talking about it. So if he was going to use that to get more money out of Michigan, it didn't work. So Sean Payton's news just happened today. But the idea that he doesn't want to coach or he's under contract, so then a trade would have to be worked out, that's a whole googly goggly mess.
Right.
So
sure.
If Rich Passaccia was the guy, the amount of time he's been in the NFL, he would have had a job already. So therefore, he has shown leadership. But the expectations were low. If you bring Rich Passaccia back, let's say you give him a 2-3 year deal, because let's call this his first year. You give him a 2 or 3 year deal. Now there's expectations on Rich Passaccia. Rich Passaccia was great when there were zero expectations on what he could or couldn't do.
But
no
Browner
one knew how he would perform.
But Browner, even if you bring in any of these guys that aren't Jim Harbaugh or Sean Payton or a big splash name, and any of these coordinators, all these guys they're interviewing, even if you bring in any of these guys, aren't there big expectations on them? There are, right? I mean, yes, there was no expectations on Passaccia. He was put in as an interim coach. He's never had that big job before. Maybe that's a marker on why, you know, hey, he's never had a job like that. But he finally got his chance, and he did everything. He totally took a total advantage of that chance and overachieved to a point in a tough division where other people saw other teams, not the Raiders, being where the Raiders were. And I just feel like, you know, if you're not going to make this splash, if you already have these big expectations and you're going to bring in some no name that you're not, you know, making headlines with, there's still those expectations. At least Passaccia fulfilled the no expectations and put you in a position to have expectations. I just feel like if they're not going to make the big move, the big name, I hope that they're just going through the marching order steps of interviewing
the
guys
rule
to make
level,
it
yeah.
Check the boxes to say we interviewed everybody, but hey, look, we're giving him Passaccia a 2 year deal. We're not married to Passaccia. We're not doing a John Gruden again, unless it's a Jim Harbaugh, or we can make a move for John Payton to do a John Gruden again. but we're going to let Passaccia at least take the roster that he got us to the playoffs with and come into camp next year and have a bunch of guys excited to play for him and excited to get off the ground in 2022. I just think it's the smarter move for the Raiders if you're going to go through all of these other, you know, laterally Passaccia types, or, you know, yeah, they might be younger. Yeah, they might have had, you know, more responsibilities in certain coordinator jobs and this, that, and the other thing. But they weren't the Raiders head coach last year that got them to the playoffs and darn near snuck out of Cincinnati with a win in the opening round.
I honestly believe this is very simple for me. Very simple. If you think Rich Passaccia, not you, I'm not. If you think Rich Passaccia is the head coach to lead that team, I would ask that person, step out of the moment. Do not be clouded by what happened. Go back, look at the games he coached, and evaluate each game to game. Don't look at the end result. Don't look at the end result. Because again, the following year, you are not going to give him that extra yardage that you gave him last season when you had no expectations. And you're 100% correct. When the new coach comes in, the expectations are going to be high. But you expect that. You expect that. You've seen Rich Passaccia be successful. So he will not have the cushion either of the coach you hire that's new. So if they start off 0-4, people say, "Oh, see, told you he shouldn't have got that job. He don't deserve that job. Look at what's happening." And that's the position that they're going to be in. And I hope that they're not, because me personally, I wouldn't hire him. But if they do, I'm not gonna poo-poo the hire, because he's proved that year he could handle it. Can he handle being the man going forward, turning all the screws? Building all the blocks, I don't know. Because, again, they don't have a general manager either. So, well, if you're Mr. Davis, are you going to say, "Hey, man, you got to keep him if you want this job"? I doubt it.
Well, that's what did about Davis is interviewing all these coaches, president of football operations. So it's kind of it feels like the coach will come before, you know, the egg will come before the chicken, so to speak, in this situation. The coach will come before the GM. As long, that's what I'm kind of picking up. And I don't know if there's still, you know, backroom discussions with Harbaugh and that they just can't finalize and just are trying to finalize. And maybe Harbaugh's sitting there going, "I want 10 years. And Davis is going, "I've already been there, done that. I don't want to go down that road." I will say this. If you bring in another lateral name, or even if he's a younger guy that has some, you know, big expectations because people are chatting about this guy or that guy and what he's done coordinating this team or that team. But my point is that if Passaccia starts out 1-3 or 0-3 or 0-4, whatever, but the other guy does too, do you feel better about the guys in the locker room at least trusting Passaccia in a situation like that more than a new face, new coach that came in here and changed things that we were doing a little bit? And why are we 0-4 with this guy? Whereas, hey, we're 0-3, 1-3, 0-4 with Passaccia, but we've got a trust built from last year. We're going to get through this, guys. Let's get to, you know, 3-4, 4-4, 4-5. And in the longer season, we'll be able to make that second half run again. And I don't know. I mean, I just feel like the Raiders are in a kind of a strange situation with what they went through with Gruden, where they're at with Passaccia, what's on the, you know, horizon with the guys that they've interviewed outside of making the big splash name. And they haven't fired anybody yet, but the job's open. It's kind of a weirder right. scenario than the other vacancies, because there's a guy there. Vacancy there. It's strange. Right.
It's like they're divorced, but they're still living together.
Right.
So they might get back together.
Like, it's like Passaccia sleeping on the couch at Allegiant Stadium right now.
Right. He's like, "Man, I pay half the rent, so I ain't moving out."
He's like, "Come on now, yeah." When his
lease is up, but now I'm not. I'm still paying half the bills in this place.
Right.
Um, so
I don't know. I mean, it's like, I get like, you know, moving on from him if you're going to make that big splash and you can make some kind of a deal that both sides come together on with a Harbaugh or another name that you could feel good about selling to the Raider fan base as this is why we're going with this guy now. But, you know, hey, Raider fans, I think would turn on, I think Raider fans and possibly Raider players would turn on a new face in a slow start next year, faster than they would turn on Passaccia.
Well, it sounds like, according to you, you think the odds are in his favor. Let's put the odds in our listeners' favor with DraftKings. There are just four teams left. I got a piece of paper. The paper told me it's four teams left, but I know it's four teams left. There's only four teams left, and you know what that means. You can make money from DraftKings Sportsbook, the official betting partner of the NFL, and they're counting down to Super Bowl 56. Customers can get 56-1 odds on any team. Bet just $5 and get 280 in free bets if your team wins.
Not a new customer? Look, you can experience the conference championship with the same game parlays. Combine multiple bets from the same game for a bigger payout. The more legs you add, the more money you can win. Look, DraftKings is safe, it's secure, and reliable. Best of all, you can deposit and withdraw your cash whenever you want.
Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now. Use promo code GREATFRIENDS and get 56-1 odds on any NFL team. Bet just $5 and win 280 in free bets if your team wins. Team promotional codes GREATFRIENDS for 56-1 odds at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Remember, you must be 21 or older to gamble. New customer, your minimum deposit must be $5 with at least a $1 wager required per customer. Restrictions apply. And remember, if you have any gambling issues, call 1-800-GAMBLER. And you can always head over to the DraftKings.com website if you have any other questions. Money!
Money.
So there you go. So who doesn't like odds? Who doesn't like odds? Who doesn't like things being in their favor? Nobody likes to go against it. Well, some people like to go against the grain. I don't hang out with those people because I want to win. I don't win my bets. We got two things left on the show. I want to get to this James Harden thing, but I also want to talk about this David Ortiz thing because I could do the James Harden thing whenever.
Mm-hmm.
David Ortiz is supposed to be going into the Baseball Hall of Fame today. If this happens, I'm gonna bash the Hall of Fame every single opportunity I get. Because this tells me if David Ortiz gets in, it's about who they like. It's not about what you've done, good or bad. Because David Ortiz got popped for steroids. So let me remind people, Barry Bonds is not in the Hall of Fame because of steroids. Roger Clemens is not in the Hall of Fame because of steroids. Arguably the greatest player ever and arguably one of the greatest pitchers ever. You cannot tell the story of baseball without those two dudes. You can't do it. And they're not in because of steroids. Allegations, whatever, whatever, whatever. Accusations, allegations, alligators.
Proof.
Now, later. Right. Whatever, right? But for some reason, this does not apply to David Ortiz. I don't know why, because if he gets in, I'm going to spend the rest of my life bashing the Baseball Hall of Fame with no level of regard for whoever's on it, period.
I've been a proponent as to being one that said, look, you made your point, Baseball
yeah.
Hall writer.
Same
okay.
Pete Rose.
And if you want to kind of lackluster them, then just put them all in at once and make that kind of hang over their head. That way everybody knows kind of like, oh, this is the steroid year, but they're Hall of Famers. So you've made your point.
Right.
Okay. Keeping them out through their initial eligibility and first years of, you know, but let's just say, hey guys, we're putting bonds. Then it's never one of their days. Like a lot of times they'll just be one or two guys. I think only one, it only happened once in the, or twice in the last few years, 30 years. I think Willie Stargell and Reggie Jackson in the last 40 to 50 years have been the only solo guys to go into the Hall of Fame with nobody else voted in that year. And there's always at least two or maybe a third. And, but just say, hey, you're going in as a band and, like take it or leave it, right? Because some of them might go, screw that, man. I ain't going in under this, like,
it's cloud, all you got. So to
everybody speak. That everybody that testified in Congress, you're going in together, right? Like, you know, Bonds, Clemens, McGuire, Palmero, whoever testified, whoever we've kept out for that reason. And I've been a proponent to say, you made your point. It's been long enough. These guys are Hall of Famers. If you want to put a five grouping in and make them all live with that together, great. But get them in the freaking Hall of Fame already. And I agree. You can't put Ortiz in. You can't just put A-Rod in one year.
Right.
You can't just do that while Clemens and Bonds and McGuire are way back over here. And, yeah, did Balco uncover things? Yes. Did ball players get smarter after Balco by hiding the way they did steroids? Yes. Did some of them still get caught? Yes. Did we just have a retirement parade for Ryan Braun? Yes.
Yes. Ryan Braun made generational money on steroids. He ain't giving that money back.
No.
And the Brewers can't take it back. So they don't take the home runs away.
No.
They didn't take his MVP away. So just move on. Move on. Put these people in a different part of it. Put them in the asterisk building at the Hall of Fame. I don't care.
Yeah. You know what you do? You know what you do? You make their busts just bigger than normal, because that's what happened. Their craniums got something. So what you do is you just take whatever the regular size bust of everybody else was, you just enlarge theirs by a third, and that's how you know the difference. Everybody that's on steroids has a three times bigger head.
I just don't get it, because this is about not liking someone and you weighing on them professionally because they didn't like you and you didn't like them during their playing career. And I just don't think it's fair. Now, there's a report that James Harden is not having a good time in Brooklyn, not playing basketball off the court. There's been reports that he doesn't like living in Brooklyn as much as he liked living in Houston. Now, I had a conversation with Jason prior to the show, very short one, and I asked him, have you been to Brooklyn? He said, yeah.
Many times.
He said, yeah, one time. Guess what?
No, Houston
just
one
like
time.
Like James Harden, he's been to both. He's been to both. Been to Brooklyn a bunch, been to Houston once. Guess what? It's the same to me. Jason, why would you guess he doesn't like Brooklyn as opposed to Houston?
I don't know. That's
very easy. Very easy.
I mean, the strip food club. Better in Brooklyn. He looks like he likes food.
Strip clubs. Titty bars. I don't know if you can say that, but I just did. Strip clubs up and down. James Harden was a strip club. Listen, I don't know what you retire at a strip club, but his bottle is in the rafters. Or what? There's a $100 bill with his face on it that was lifted up into the rafters of the Houston metropolitan area in the strip club Hall of Fame, okay? He's a lifestyle guy. Because this idea that, oh, he's going to go to Philadelphia, because that's how this report came out, that, oh, he's going to go to Philadelphia in the offseason because he doesn't like living in Brooklyn. Look, man, I don't know what the strip club is like in Philadelphia. I really don't. But I tell you this, it ain't going to be like it is in Houston. If that's the case, just side with Atlanta.
Yeah, go to Atlanta. Does Tampa have a basketball team? Because that's like stripper capital. Yeah, man. I mean, it's like, you know, the two best markets for strip clubs in America, there isn't an NBA team in Las Vegas or Tampa. But, yeah, I guess, yeah, you're right. That's a good point. I never really looked at it that way. It's weird that over an 82-game schedule with all of their travel and all of their demands, a place as easy as and as simple as just living in for that part of the season is that big of a determiner. I just don't, I've never understood that about the NBA. It's like, oh, he wants to live in warm weather. It's like, do you know what the NBA schedule is? Like, you're in warm weather for home games, but it's still winter everywhere else in the league, and you're on road trips, and you don't really, I don't know. I've always felt that that was weird. I get like, hey, you want to play in LA or San Diego for baseball or maybe football because, right, you know, you get a better lifestyle throughout the week. You know, baseball, you're just, you know, on a homestand. You got a house in Encinitas. If you play for the Padres, you got a 12-game homestand. You're playing in a nice sunny ballpark. There's never any rain delays. Football, yeah, you want to play in a warmer weather climate all week long. If you got two or three home games in a row, you're practicing in a facility near Tampa or San Diego or Los Angeles, whatever. But the NBA, especially knowing the travel schedule firsthand through a friend of mine that was a trainer for the Grizzlies for many years, you don't. It's not even a. There's no domestication to that life other than the off season. It's just weird. So other than, yeah, you're right. Absolutely. The only time you have anything domesticated in that life is after a ball game, maybe in a 2 or 3 day stretch, 4 day stretch where you're home. And guess where you go after the ball game? To a strip club late night after you take the shower, talk to the reporter. You're there till 4 in the morning with your security guards, getting table, bottle service. But yeah, you can't do that in Brooklyn like you can in Houston.
I honestly think that James Harden is just a different character, man. It's famous that the reason he didn't perform well in his first NBA Finals when he was with Oklahoma City Thunder, because he spent all night out at his clubs. Like, yeah, that's a well-documented – he played great in Oklahoma City. When the series went over to Miami, he was terrible. And he just never stopped doing that. So,
and you know, for, go ahead.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say what really kind of bothers me about Harden though, more than anything, is that when you look at – when you look at Harden, when you look at where he's at in his career, where he's been in his career, how old he is at this point of his career, the guys he has around him in a you know, franchise that has, you know, so much potential to win an NBA championship, he doesn't seem hungry. Pardon the pun. He always looks hungry, but he doesn't seem hungry. You know, Kyrie.
We will see how hungry you are for tomorrow's game.
Man.